It's showtime, folks. Welcome in, Chase and Big Joe, 102.5, 106.3, the game here on this Wednesday. He's Big Joe. I'm Chase McCabe, Dr. Crane, Nick Frazier, on the ones and twos. Hope you're having a wonderful start to your day, and I can tell you right now.
Yeah, man.
We are not putting up with it today.
We're not. And I'm telling you, it's dreary outside, and it's awful outside, but today's the day you give thanks. You know why? Because it clears out. We're grateful for the beautiful, sunshiny, wonderful, lovely days that we so embrace. So sometimes you got to go through this, and that makes it even more grateful for the beautiful days. So embrace today, my friends. Give thanks in it.
Yes, absolutely. We have a huge show planned. Missouri football coach Eli Drinkwitz scheduled to join us here anytime now in just a few minutes as they get ready for the TransPerfect Music City Bowl. We're going to have him on. We hope to have Kirk Ferentz on as well from Iowa, because Joe and I are hosting the official pregame show for the Music City Bowl, so look forward to that. Steven Stamkos going to join us at 9:15. The Predators win last night at Bridgestone Arena. Fun, close game against the New York Rangers. They win 2-0, get the shutout. And then John McClain is going to shift to 10 o'clock, so looking forward to talking to him.
That'd be fun, man. Yeah, it's hard to believe. Also, I know you didn't see it last night, but the bowl season has started. That Frisco Bowl last night,
we were watching some of it.
And Memphis, that was a – these bowl games, I know people are like, oh, they're not playing and guys are checking out. They're fun. They're fun to watch, man. Last night's game, Memphis beat West Virginia, but, man, it was crazy down the stretch.
Oh, yeah. The bowl games are definitely fun, including the TransPerfect Music City Bowl that's coming to Nissan Stadium. We will have it here on December the 30th. Head coach of the Missouri Tigers, Eli Drinkwitz, is on the line with us now. Coach, how you doing?
Man, I'm doing great. Congratulations to Memphis. Most wins in school history. What a job Ryan Silverfield's doing, man. So that's awesome for him. I know the state of Tennessee is celebrating their football right now. Obviously, you got Vandy in a bowl game. You got Tennessee in the playoffs. So what a time to be a football fan in the state of Tennessee.
Oh, it's definitely fun. Gives us something to talk about. But I know you have to be pleased with your Tigers and the season that you all had. There and coming to Nashville to play Iowa in the Music City Bowl. And what's funny is we were talking about this last week. This was supposed to be the matchup in 2020.
Yeah.
Obviously, COVID had other plans, but now we finally get to see it.
Yeah, isn't it remarkable how the Lord works? And sometimes you get an opportunity to go back and redo something. But I know this, that 2020 Iowa team, they were tough as nails. So, but this 2024 team defensively is really an elite squad. Offensively, they got some really, really good players. They've been banged up a little bit at quarterback. But Kirk Ferentz does an outstanding job, has been a great head coach for a long time, kind of the standard bearer for consistency in a program. And it'll be a real challenge for us. I'm very excited about the opportunity to be in Nashville. What a great city to stay in the Gaylord. Hotels and get to play in Nissan Stadium. I mean, when you talk about bowl games, this is one of those destinations that you're really excited about the opportunity.
How do you approach this game? Because obviously things have changed with how it works the last few years. I mean, you're having to focus on practice and everything for this game, but also you're having to look ahead with just had early signing day, the portal, all that stuff that you're having to manage. So what's it kind of like from the head coach's seat getting ready for this thing?
Well, you have to prioritize, and my number one priority is this football team and this senior class. These guys have worked really hard for this opportunity, and I would be in the wrong if I spent my time focusing on next year instead of this year and finishing. And we had a great devotional Sunday about being finishers, and that's really what this team and our coaching staff wants to do. We want to put ourselves in the best position possible to compete versus a really good Iowa team and try to finish the season. And you can't control the outcomes, but you can sure control your daily process. And so that's really been our mindset. Obviously, you got to compartmentalize and spend some time. I just got done with a recruiting breakfast and was walking out the door. That's why I was a little bit late getting to this call. I'm heading to a team meeting at 10. But like I told our team, when we're here, when we're working, our focus is 100% preparing for Iowa and having the will to win that game.
We're talking to Missouri head football coach Eli Drinkwitz on the Chase and Big Joe show. Coach, I'm always fascinated on planning and practicing for a bowl game because you got exams, guys need to go home to see their families, and you got to practice. What's kind of the routine you guys are going to have leading up to the Music City Bowl?
Yeah, I think it's a get-to thing, right? It's an opportunity. You get an opportunity to practice and develop. And football is a game where you get better at practice. So we spent the first part of this week and last week really just working developmental practices. No focus on anything specific. Just, hey, how do we get better? And then after that, we've kind of zoned in on Iowa. We're going to work up until Sunday. We're going to give our guys 3 days to go home for Christmas and celebrate the holidays with their families, which in college football is a really difficult thing to get to do. So I know our guys are excited about that. We'll come back after Christmas, travel to the bowl site, and get ready to play.
You know, this season with you and you guys in the SEC, people talk about just how difficult it is. I mean, you really understand how difficult it is each week. I mean, how easy is it or difficult is it, Coach, during the week to put behind a game on Saturday and then get ready for, you know, an Alabama or a Georgia or a Tennessee coming up? Because I got to think at some point it's kind of like, oh, my goodness, when does this end?
Yeah, I mean, the reality of the SEC, which is different than every other league, is every team has a game wrecker. And they have multiple players who are going to be NFL draft picks and starters. And so it doesn't matter if a team's, you know, a 5-5 or if they're 10-2, you have to prepare to get their best. And every team's got talent. It's just a matter of when and how they put it together. So it's a challenge. You can't get too high, too low. And the key to it is trying to be consistent in your approach.
Coach Eli Drinkwitz is with us from Missouri. So with this new era of college football with the 12-team playoff, you know, how do you feel like this first year went? As you know, the committee obviously had their job to do to figure out the best 12 teams, and some good teams got left out. But when it comes to the SEC as a whole, I mean, you know how dominant this conference can be. How do you think it all shook out, and could you see maybe some changes moving forward?
Man, I definitely think there'll be changes. I mean, I think ultimately in the SEC – there's a lot of the teams who controlled their own destiny, and for whatever reason, I mean, this is the deepest league, toughest league in college football, and at the end, we kind of beat ourselves up, which ultimately cost us positions in the playoffs. So I don't think it's a flawed system. It's just this is a really tough conference, and so for us to try to get four teams in that league, I mean, I said it before, it's going to take 10 wins to get in the playoffs, and that's really what the committee showed us.
How special has it been being able to coach Luther Burden? Because he's so much fun to watch.
Man, you want to talk about not only is he an extreme talent, ball-in-his-hand competitor, but, man, he's a great kid. He is a unbelievable competitor, great work ethic, low-maintenance, high-output young man. And he's grown into that. He's developed it. He's developed his consistency. And I got to give a lot of credit to our strength staff in developing those daily habits into our wide receivers coach, Coach Peeler. But it's been a special 3 years. It's been a really fast 3 years.
Oh, absolutely. Missouri head coach Eli Drinkwitz is with us. And Coach Rick Stockstill's a friend of the show. And one time he told us about going to bowl games. He said he's never been to a bad bowl game. And that really hit me like, you know what? Yeah, and you talked about a moment ago, Coach, about being appreciative and grateful to having this opportunity to be in a bowl game. What does it mean to your program to get to go to a bowl game?
Yeah, for us, it's the fifth straight bowl game that we've had an opportunity to compete in. And it's a get-to opportunity. You get to play the game one more time. For the seniors, you never know when it's going to be the last time you have an opportunity to play the game. And so you got to cherish that. You don't always get to run out in front of your friends and families and play a game that you work so hard and love. You don't always get to go out and pick. I mean, the TransPerfect Music City Bowl has a great list of gifts for us. You get free gear, you know, meals paid for. You get to go down to Broadway and have fun. It's a heck of a deal. And I have to agree with Coach Stockstill.
Yeah.
I've never been to a bad bowl game. I've been to Mobile. I've been to San Diego. I've been to El Paso. I've been to Shreveport on Christmas. And every one of them was awesome.
I love it. I know you've come to town and played Vanderbilt, but have you ever come here like on your own with your wife and the kids, like during the summer and just time to get away?
Well, there's not much time to get away. I've been there several times, and my wife and I have been there. I was actually invited and went to the grand opening of Chiefs, Eric Church's bar. So I've spent some time there, and it's a great place.
Oh, that's awesome.
Coach, you mentioned when we started this, you know, Vanderbilt, you saw them earlier in the year where you guys were able to get it in two overtimes in a great football game. Diego Pavia, just defending him, how difficult was that?
Well, Clark Lee is as good a football coach as there is in the country, and has done an excellent job just sticking to the process. I'm so impressed with what he's done and how he's done it consistently there. And obviously he got the right stuff in Diego, and man, it is a difficult challenge. I tell you what, I think that's when the world realized that Vanderbilt was for real. I mean, we beat them in double overtime. We got dropped in the polls. All right. And then the next week, week or two later, they beat Alabama, and I was laughing saying, all right, well, now everybody realizes this dude is for real. And so I'm not rooting against the guy, but I am rooting against that lawsuit. I'm sure hoping he's not back next year because he's a heck of a player.
That's a very good point. Coach, thanks so much for taking the time to do this. We're looking forward to seeing you here in a couple weeks in Nashville. Merry Christmas to you and the family, and we'll talk soon.
Appreciate the opportunity, brother.
Absolutely.
M-I-Z.
Coach Eli Drinkwitz joining us here on the program, head coach of the Missouri Tigers, and again, the Transperfect Music City Bowl coming up on December 30th at Nissan Stadium. You and I hosting the official pregame show. He's fun.
I absolutely is. And I look at this, you know, he's got an administration around him that's patient. Because he went 5, the COVID year, I don't even count that, but 6-7, 6-7, they went to a bowl game, and then boom, 11-2 and 9-3. He's made Missouri so relevant in football that he's worth every penny, man.
Yeah. And I mean, look, I think you look at that record, 5-3 in the SEC, that's just a product of playing in the SEC.
Oh,
I mean,
yeah.
And just in how difficult it is, especially now with no divisions and the schedule changing. But, you know, he's a guy that if they continue this upward trend, and obviously they're going to lose a lot after this year. You know, Burden's probably going to the NFL. Brady Cook, their quarterback, is going to be done. So we'll kind of see what next year looks like. But we know in today's college football, it's year to year. If he continues building this up, I mean, his name's going to be mentioned for – you know, many, many jobs out there, but he seems to be very happy at Missouri.
I thought he'd left after last year. You know what he makes a year?
Uh-uh.
$9 million.
Yeah.
Look, as long as you're winning and your family's happy, stay where you are.
We're moving fast and furious to start today. We got a lot that we're going to get into. The Predators win last night 2-0 at Bridgestone Arena against the New York Rangers and former head coach Peter Laviolette. Steven Stamkos going to join us coming up next here on Chasing Big Joe, 102.5, 106.3, The Game. Chasing Big Joe, 102.5, 106.3, The Game on this Wednesday. Predators, the song played twice last night, and it felt real good. Get the 2-0 win over the New York Rangers last night. Let's bring in the man that had the primary assist on both goals, Steven Stamkos, who's on the line with us. Steven, good morning. How you doing?
Good morning, guys. I'm good. How you guys doing?
We're doing fantastic. Nice one last night. I know it was a tough one, a hard-fought victory, but 2-0, you guys get the shutout. I want to start with Adam Willsby's goal. That you had the primary assist on that. That was pretty. That kid, that was what a shot.
Yeah, it's actually funny because he scored the other night in Dallas on a pretty similar play where he, you know, kind of made a great move coming into the zone and went top shelf and celebrated what he thought was his first goal. And then to get that call back on the offside was disappointing. So for him to score, you know, arguably an even nicer goal as his first in the NHL was kind of ironic, but we were all really excited. It was a big goal for us in the game, and glad he could do it in a win.
You guys have obviously been dealing with some injuries when it comes to the defense. I mean, how big has it been for young guys like him to step up? Because I really think they've done a nice job.
Yeah, they have. And as a young guy, that's all you can ask for sometimes is an opportunity. And then it's up to you with, you know, what you do with those extra minutes. And they've been great. Obviously, we've lost, you know, three really good defensemen, you know, on the back end. And it's you know, been a struggle for us, but those guys have stepped up and have played great. And I think a lot of those guys are giving themselves a chance to be up here the rest of the year, regardless of who's in the lineup. So it's a good problem to have when you have, you know, multiple options on the back end, and that bodes well for us going forward.
I don't know how you look at things, but I typically try, with an 82-game season, I kind of try and look at it in three-game segments. You guys have won two out of your last three. The Dallas game, I thought, obviously, you had to be happy with that. Good parts against Colorado got away from you, and then last night getting the win. So how would you kind of look at how you guys are playing as a whole over the course of the last three games?
Yeah, I think it's getting better. You know, obviously, you know, you don't dwell on what's happened, you know, kind of the first 20 games. Like you said, you kind of break it down into little 3 to 5 game segments, and we've won, you know, 2 of the last 3. I think Colorado could have went a different way as well. We had a couple breakdowns that ended up in the back of our net, but we're generating a lot more scoring chances than we were in the past. You know, the pucks are going to find the net eventually if we keep continuing that. And like we just talked about, you know, the young defensemen have played well, but, you know, it's tough to replace a Roman Josi or Carrier or Lazon. I mean, those guys are established NHL defensemen that are going to help us whenever they get back healthy and into the lineup. So, you know, we got Juice back there, as you saw last night, can really, you know, just be a calming presence for us. And we just have to find a way to keep clawing. We got a few games here before the Christmas break, and we want to make sure that we're establishing home ice as a tough place to play.
We're talking to Steven Stamkos on the Chase and Big Joe Show. Steven, you might not know this, but between the three of us, we have 555 goals in the NHL. Isn't that crazy? That's amazing, isn't it? Do you remember your first goal?
Oh, of course. I think everyone remembers their first goal. Mine was a long time ago, back in 2008 in Buffalo. It was a tip-in, so it probably wasn't the prettiest of goals that I've scored over my career, but one of the biggest for sure. And like I said, that's something you dream of as a kid and as a young hockey player, scoring your first goal in the NHL. And, you know, you remember it like it was yesterday.
I love it. And I was reading about you through your career in the NHL, about how when guys score their first goal and young guys come up, how you kind of talk to them and kind of mentor them a little bit. Is that fun doing that? Because I think that would be fun to kind of say, like, look for this, look for that, here's what to expect and all that. Do you enjoy doing that?
Well, for sure. I mean, you want to help out the young guys when they get in the league. It can be sometimes intimidating, nerve-wracking, anxious. I mean, all the things that come with being a professional athlete, especially when it's, you know, your first game or first season in the NHL. That's where you rely on some of the older guys to help just guide you through there. I mean, we're not holding anyone's hand and telling them what to do. They've made it to this level for a reason, because of a certain skill set that they bring. And sometimes it can be hard, and this year's been hard for all of us. So if you can help, you know, any young player, just like the older guys helped me when I came in the league, it's, you know, it's part of the process, and it's something that I think they appreciate. I know I really did when the veteran guys would talk to me and help me in my, you know, first year. So it's something that I enjoy doing.
I love it. I think it's so cool. We're the positive show, by the way, Steven, so we're with you on all this. Here's another crazy question. When you got your first big NHL check, who was the first person you called?
Well, I don't know, to be honest, if I necessarily called anybody, but, you know, as you know, I was 18 years old, and you're getting, you know, a lot of money at a young age, and I was pretty fortunate to have you know, parents that were really, you know, kind of instilled that mentality of, you know, being humble and, you know, just being appreciative of everything that you're going to get in your career. And, you know, my dad has really helped me still to this day when it comes to the financial aspect. He's really into that and is really good at doing that. So I've been fortunate. Not everyone is as fortunate, and sometimes that money can it comes in quick and it can go out quick too, so you have to be smart with it. And like I said, I was fortunate to be surrounded by a group of people that helped me, but, you know, still it's still pretty cool as a young kid to get a big check like that. And you know, you almost just stare at it in your bank account,
right?
You know, not thinking it's real, but it's certainly part of all the hard work that you've done in your life and the dedication and that, and you've earned it, and it's kind of cool.
I'll tell you, at 18, I was still stealing money of my mother's purse. So yeah. We have there's a 180, you and I. All right, so tomorrow night, Pittsburgh comes into town. How do we keep this momentum going tomorrow night? Because you guys got a little momentum now.
Yeah, well, I just, you know, I'm seeing more consistent play, you know, systematically, and, you know, we've done some line kind of shuffling, and it seems like we've settled in something that's worked more consistently for the last 3-4 games for our group. So just continue that. And like I said, we got a few games here left before the break, and we want to take advantage. I mean, you know, it's a really long season and there's a lot of hockey left. So if we can get into that feeling good about ourselves, then I like our chances.
Do you feel like you've settled in kind of there at center ice with Forsberg and Marchessault?
For sure. I think, you know, making that move from the wing back to center, where, you know, I haven't really played a lot of in recent years, but certainly the place I feel comfortable with. I think just, you know, that last 4 games, like I mentioned, where our lines played together, you can feel the chemistry growing. For me personally, just being in the middle of the ice and being able to utilize some speed, you know, skating the puck up through the neutral zone, and just, you know, those two guys are very offensively gifted, and you want to get them to puck in certain areas, and I've really liked their game, and I think it's just going to continue to get better.
Do you think, I've talked to some of the other guys about this, do you think that kind of looking now as you're at this point, December in the season, that, you know, you obviously had only played in one place, you're coming here, you had Marchessault that was coming here, and a lot of new pieces, that maybe that transition took a little bit longer than anybody thought it was going to, and now we're just starting to kind of see it all come into place?
Well, you certainly hope so. I mean, yeah, it's tough. No one knows what to expect when you're making a transition like that. And, you know, we all hope that it happens early and things go great at the beginning, but they didn't. It took some time, and obviously we didn't get off to the start that you wanted, and it kind of snowballs from there. But, you know, it gets to a certain point where, you know, you just go out there and play and do what made you successful in the past, no matter where you were. And I think we've had that mentality here a little bit lately. Like I said, we've changed a few things up that have seemed to be working, and hopefully we can continue that.
Yeah, for sure. Steven, thanks so much for doing this today. Congrats on the win last night, and let's keep it going against Pittsburgh.
Okay, thanks, guys. Appreciate it.
Absolutely. Steven Stamkos, Predators forward, joining us here on the program. And appreciate him for taking the time. They won 2-0 last night against
that guy,
former head coach
dog.
Peter Laviolette and the
that
New York Rangers. And the Pittsburgh Penguins come to town tomorrow night. Pregame at 6, puck drop at 7 here on 105.163
again. All right, that coming up, there is a thing, I want to get your thoughts on this, where college coaches,
Pittsburgh,
football coaches,
what's happening?
Are doing something to save their job. And I want your reaction to this.
Okay.
I'm not sure I'm all on board.
December 18th, okay, we'll do that. Also, John McClain usually joins us at 9:30. He'll
Chris
be at 10 o'clock today here on the Chase and Big Joe Show, presented by the Omni
ago,
Nashville Hotel,
right?
102.5, 102.3 The Game.
What, were you 9, 10?
I was 10, yeah.
I'll never forget, I got the phone call. I was like, what? And then you realize the life he led. It's like, why didn't this not happen a couple of years earlier?
So you know what was funny? Chase and Big Joe, 102.5, 102.3 The Game. Obviously, I didn't know how big of a deal he was at that point at 10 years old. Whether this was a good thing or not, I had seen the movie Black Sheep at that point, so yeah. I knew who he was. I don't think I had seen anything else at that point, but so I knew like, oh hey, that's the guy from that movie, like
right.
The funny guy, the big guy, you know, or whatever. But then you think about, like, John Candy was in Home Alone, you know, and John Candy was in Blank Check, I think he was in. Like, he was in some kid movies and stuff, and it's like, oh yeah, that guy. And just the impact that those guys had, you know, and then, you know, they pass away at such a young age. It was just like dang, you know, as I got older, you know, kind of learning more, and obviously, but didn't Farley say, like, he want, like,
John Belushi.
Belushi and John Candy, like, those guys were, like, his heroes.
Well, Belushi was. They died at the same age at 33, yeah. and they both just lived life to the fullest. But he's Obi-Wan. He has grown bigger after he passed away than anything else. And, you know, the Adam Sandler tribute to him, that song, which I've heard 1,000 times, which I cry 1,000 times because it's about any of us and our friends and our buddies. And, man, it's just – I mean, that impact was like 5 years, was like 90 to 95. Mm-hmm. And what would he have been had he lived? Who knows? Who knows? Maybe guys like that aren't meant to live. Like, Candy died early. Belushi died early. He died early. We don't know how the impact they would have had. But for the time that we had with them, I mean, from the Patrick Swayze skit to Tommy Boy to on and on and on, man, it's just, it's unbelievable. So 27 years ago, And I'm telling you right now, the way he lived, the way he died, the pictures of him after he died, there have to be people who said, you know what? I'm not doing drugs anymore. There have to
be. Oh, yeah.
Because once you see those pictures, if you could still do drugs after that, I don't know what could save you, man. Just awful, awful, awful. But, yeah, 27 years ago. But I think it's something everybody saw happening. And I never met him. I never saw him. We all just laugh because he made us laugh. And that was the endearing thing with him, is that he just made us laugh. And we use his clips all the time on the show, which is even better for that. So, all right, Chase, here's your opinion. I need your thoughts on this.
All right.
There's a new trend in developing in college football, big time. College coaches are beginning to donate portions of their salaries back to their athletic department in an effort to boost roster construction efforts. Brian Kelly became the first high-profile example when he gave $1 million back to the Tiger Athletic Foundation's Excellence Fund. Then, Florida State coach Mike Norvell made an even larger commitment earlier this week following the Noles 2-10 season. He is set to give back nearly $5 million in a gift that will help launch FSU's Vision of Excellence initiative. Question, are they doing that because they care? Are they doing that because they're trying to save their ass? Because these two coaches are on the hot seat. What say you, Chase McCabe?
Ooh, it's a slippery slope. But how many times have we said slippery slope when it comes to college athletics
right, lately?
I mean, yeah. Look, I mean, I saw the – did you see the story on Travis Hunter? That he didn't get a – like, he wasn't getting a dime from Colorado's NIL fund, and he actually put some money into it to help his teammates out because he was getting it elsewhere. I mean, that's just kind of where we are.
But I'm talking about coaches.
Yeah, no, I know.
Saving their tails. Is it genuine? Or are they trying to sell it? Because I think in this case, with these two guys, trying to save the tail.
It was Norvell, and who was the other one?
Brian Kelly. You don't see Heupel doing this.
Okay. Norvell, I'm not sure. Brian Kelly, it's always CYA. Like, I don't think there's a genuine bone in that man's body. I would say it's CYA.
All right, because you don't see anybody else. I mean, I don't see, at least I haven't heard, like a James Franklin or, you know.
Mark, yeah, well, I mean, but Freeman, look, at Notre Dame. Would you be shocked if James Franklin was, I mean.
Yes, because it's all about him.
No, but here, now, all right, so here's where things get interesting. So let's say for a second. So this is the NIL fund or what is it they're putting in?
Yeah, back to the collective.
Yeah, the collective. What's going to stop Coach A? I'm not going to put a name on it, but Coach A got this fund. And I'm like, Coach, this is what we got in the fund. All right, cool. Well, there's this star receiver down in Birmingham that we really, really want. And, you know, if we take this much out of the fund, you know, we're not going to be able to go get this guy and all this stuff. How much is it? He wants $3 million. I got it. I'll put it in there. What's to stop that from happening?
Yeah, nothing.
It's CYA in this situation, but I mean, you know, all these we just talked about it. Eli Drinkwitz makes $9 million a year. You know, these coaches are not going broke by any means. So what's to stop them from and I don't know all the rules. I don't know, like, can they directly just, you know, cut a check or, you know, how does this work?
Well, at Rex Road, Norvell was a forced pay cut. The school did it. According to this story in FSU, Mike Norvell is restructuring his contract in the heels of a disastrous campaign. It includes a massive contribution from the head coach to help launch fundraising efforts at FSU. Now,
so I wonder if that was like the settlement of like, yeah, I'll take a pay cut, but you're going to put it here, which ultimately benefits him.
Yeah, right. So I see what Joe's saying.
Yeah, I do too.
At the same time, they've worded it where it's like, hey, man, this guy's giving it back, and he really cares about us.
Right.
So it's not genuine.
No.
So it's not genuine.
And look, honestly, from his standpoint, that's kind of genius. If like, okay, yeah, if you're going to punish me because we had a bad year and you're going to force me to take a pay cut, but you want to take a piece of my salary, all right, put it back in the NIL fund, which helps the school, which also helps him.
Here's a quote from Norvell. I presented this to our administration in an effort to boost the support of our student athletes while recognizing that the results and expectations need to be upheld to the highest level. I wanted to be proactive in my financial assistance through this time of transition as we all push forward to get back to the standard of Florida State football. So, yeah, it's not genuine. Had he gone 10-2 and been in the playoffs, he ain't giving a dime back. They're not giving any money back. We see right – and you're right with Brian Kelly. We see right through you. Right through you, Brian Kelly. And I don't know a single LSU fan who likes him. And no. I know several. They don't like him.
You know, it's funny. And maybe we need to reach out to Caroline on this because she could speak on this. But, like, I look back at them. Ed Orgeron was the perfect coach for LSU. Was he the best coach? Absolutely not. You know, did he kind of luck it? It's better to be lucky than good.
There you go, like baby. You're right.
Did he kind of luck into 2019? You know, you get Joe Burrow. You have Joe Brady. Like, you put the right pieces together. You know, obviously, he had a lot to do with that, but – you know, he won a national championship, and then a few years later he was gone. And I know there was some other stuff that, you know, with all that. But it was like, if you look at LSU and it's like, draw me the perfect coach for the LSU Tigers, is it not Ed Orgeron?
It is, but he wore out his welcome.
I know he did. But like, now you bring in this bozo that nobody has ever liked. Like, tell me, like, I'd love to ask Notre Dame fans, did you ever like Brian Kelly? I know Cincinnati fans that didn't like him, you know, couldn't stand him. I mean, he's been that kind of guy, and now that's who you got at LSU. And guess what he hasn't done at LSU?
You're right.
He hasn't won.
You're right. He hasn't won at all. And so that's the thing, and, you know, they're going to get tired of that. He wore his welcome and surprise. He was at Notre Dame as long as he was. Huh?
Was that your computer?
It was my computer.
Oh, okay.
But we turned it off there. We're all good now. But I just think that, you know, at some point, and, you know, you can maybe ride out with them and lower the overall, you know, payout you had to it that maybe turns it around. I don't know. And, you know, we always like fire and fire and fire and fire and fire, you know, and that's – who knows with that being said. But this is not genuine to me because these only coaches are giving back because they're on the hot seat and that's why. And you don't see the coaches that are, you know, you don't see – Dan Lanning doing this. You don't see, you know, Kirby doing all that because they don't have to because they know their job is secure.
No, but, like, I do wonder if at some point they're going to look at this and go, oh, but, you know, we could do that if it means I'm going to be able to get a certain player.
Yeah.
Like, not that I think these – because there's no salary cap or anything like this. Not that I think any of these funds are going to be short because, you know, we all know that the big boy schools have – they have the boosters, and then they have the booster that is the one that when you want to fire the coach, you go to him, and he cuts the check.
Yeah.
He's also going to be the one that, hey, this five-star over here that we need, you know, $2 million more dollars. He'll be like, I got you. Bring that boy to school.
Let's go. The Yellowwood guy, when I found out he was the guy at Auburn,
yeah,
blew my mind.
Is he the guy that was in all the commercials?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yellowwood. I mean, that when I found out that he had so much money – and was calling all the shots at Auburn, probably 98% of them, because I know coaches on that staff when Terry Bowden took over down there in 93 and left in 98 because he fell out of favor with the Yellowwood guy and a few other things. But those are those guys. Every school has those. You know, and then the quarterback that flipped from LSU to Michigan because the richest man in the world, his girlfriend's a Michigan fan or whatever it is, and $10 million through that. What a time to be alive, man.
Who was it? Was it T. Boone Pickens that was the Oklahoma State guy?
God, he had so much money.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, he could carry –
he was an oil man, right?
He could carry a wallet around with $1 billion and lose it and not be affected.
Yeah.
We find $20 in our pants pocket, and it's like, you want to go to lunch? We're so excited.
$20 is $20.
Hell yeah, it is. Right?
Very interesting for sure. 615-737-1025. That's our phone and text line driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. John McClain going to join us at the top of the next hour. We've got more coming here on Chase and Big Joe, 1025, 1063 The Game.
35 years old. I am divorced, and I live in a van down by the river. Now, you kids are probably saying to yourselves, hey, I'm going to go out and I'm going to get the world by the tail and wrap it around and pull it down and put it in my pocket. Well, I'm here to tell you that you're probably going to find out as you go out there that you're not going to amount to jack squat.
Matt Foley.
Never not funny,
oh,
man.
Here's my Chase and Big Joe, 1025, 1063, The Game. Here is my favorite, excuse me, my favorite part about that entire skit. because it's David Spade and Christina Applegate that are in it as well. Spade can't hold it together.
Right.
Like, he, like during the whole thing, David Spade's supposed to be like the kid sitting there on the couch, and he can't hold it together because Farley's just going all over the place. And didn't I read that most of that was just, you know, they kind of told him what in general they wanted, but just let him go?
Yep, it was. And Bob Odenkirk, Better Call Saul, created the character because it was somebody – maybe a priest or somebody that he knew or that made him laugh was like that. And so that character took off. I mean, that, I mean, come on, that's 30 years. It's funny now as it was back then 30 years ago. I remember that night.
So good.
Just did like, it's like 92 or 93, right in that era when it happened. And Phil Hartman's the dad in that skit. And
oh, that's right. Yeah.
Just on and on, man. Good stuff with all that.
Phil Hartman, another one. That was, 97 was a rough year.
It was a rough year.
For,
I comics. Think he passed in 98. Or
maybe he was 98. Yeah. But, I mean, they were close together.
Yeah. It was awful, man. Just awful. And that the way Phil Hartman died and all that was terrible.
So, we don't talk politics on this show. This is the – I mean, we're going to tiptoe to it for a second, but you'll understand why. You know, a lot of people are being appointed to different positions as there's a transition in this country when it comes to leadership. A ambassador to the Bahamas has been named by the incoming president. That is former running back Herschel Walker is going to be the ambassador to the Bahamas. And my question for you, Joe, is where would you like to be the ambassador? Because I see all these people getting chosen to go to these interesting places to be the ambassador. I don't really know what he is supposed to do.
Ambassador
as
things
as the ambassador of the Bahamas, but does it mean he gets to go just chill in the Bahamas?
I think so. I mean, I would. That's a
there are worse things to do.
I mean, I would want to be one of those Caribbean islands like Curacao or St. Bart's, or they all get ambassadors, right? So why not? Yeah, that's good. Yeah. I wonder if he's taking Bill Bates with him. You know, do you know the story?
No.
So in 1980, he's a freshman, and Georgia's playing in Tennessee. And Tennessee's about to win. It's here Georgia wins the national championship. And they just give the ball to Herschel on just a basic sweep. And he meets Bill Bates at the goal line. And he absolutely destroys Bill Bates. And I think it might be Larry Munson. Like, my God.
Yeah.
One of those, like, Bill Bates. I mean, he just sent Bill Bates flying. So that was.
I asked Kurt Page one time, you know, because Kurt was the quarterback at Vanderbilt in the, you know, the around that time.
Uh-huh.
And I said, is there a guy that you played against that you just, like, the first time you saw him, you just knew, like, there was something different, he was built different, and without thinking, without hesitation, he said, Herschel.
It's amazing.
Like, Herschel was that guy.
And it's sad because you're like, well, what did he do in the pros? I hate when they do that. Like, you know, he had a decent.
He was part of the biggest trade in NFL
history.
Yeah,
he had a decent career in the pros, but I'm telling you, him and Bo Jackson, I don't think we'll ever see that again. I mean, Herschel was at Georgia 80-82. Bo was at Auburn 82-85. And I'm serious. I don't think we'll ever see that type of running back again. The size, the strength, you couldn't bring him down. They outran your fastest DB. And these guys are 6'1", 6'2", 230. And it was in the early 80s. And I don't think we've even come close to seeing something like that since then, even in college football.
Like, when you talk about just like a built different, you know, generational type talent.
Yeah.
I think Travis Hunter might be that. Maybe not to the same scale as a Herschel Walker or Bo Jackson, but I mean he's pretty special.
And somebody's like, well, he had an average year as a DB. They threw away from him.
Right. Yeah, they didn't throw
away. Well, average year as a receiver. We had coordinators talk about, I mean, defensive coordinators said, we triple teamed him. He's not going to beat us.
Yeah.
So, yeah, your numbers are going to be – when guys are doing that, your numbers are going to be slightly off. He was more deserving. I'm telling you, you put Dylan Sampson and that Boise State team, he gives you the same numbers. Same numbers.
Oh, yeah.
He's a great running back. Genty, that's fine, but no way did he deserve
so
it more.
So, he didn't have a great year as a receiver. He's a DB,
right.
Technically. He didn't – 92 catches, 1,100 yards, and 14 touchdowns. Yeah, that's pretty crappy. Right. That's pretty crappy as a receiver.
Right. And that's going both ways. I mean, that could get it done. People like to yelp to yelp.
And then defensively, 21 solo tackles. He had 4 picks.
Not bad. But you're cornerback. You're not supposed to lead the team in tackling.
No.
I don't want you in the top 10 in tackling.
No.
I want you in that top one.
He has 7 picks in his 2 years at Colorado.
I'm not throwing that way. Would you throw that way? I'm not. The guy has shown he can intercept any ball that comes anywhere near him. I'm not doing that.
I mean, it's funny. Like, you know, I'll talk to people and be like, you know, who does he remind you of? I'm like, his coach.
Yeah, a lot of way. Except Deion did not like to tackle.
No.
Travis Hunter likes to tackle.
No. And I think Travis is a better receiver than Deion was. I mean, Deion was a DB, but I know Deion had, you know, those offensive skills.
Right.
For sure. But return-wise, I don't know. I mean, Deion was one of the best return guys.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I remember when my defensive line coach at Samford played with Deion at Florida State, and we were talking. I'll never forget this. He said, you know, Deion in the 40 ran an unofficial 4.19. And I'm like, unofficial? I mean, that's still, even if it's official, what do you have, 4.25 or something? And you realize the speed. And I was like, what's that like? He's like, he's just so fast that it's kind of hard to really comprehend how fast he is during a game or in practice or returning and all that. And so, plus, Deion's got one of the best lines of all time to Andrea Kramer when the Falcons drafted him. He said, remember he's on the couch.
You're going to put me on layaway? This is awesome.
That's one of the best lines ever. So, those guys are generational, man, and they few and far between, especially the running backs and guys like Deion and all that. But I think Travis Hunter is definitely up there in that.
Didn't he have in one game, didn't he have a pick six, returned a kick or a punt for a touchdown and had a receiving touchdown?
Was it the Clemson game in 88 that Deion had that?
I thought it was in the NFL he did it.
There was a game in college he did something like that. He returned. NFL, I don't know. Maybe the Falcons he had that? I don't know.
Maybe. I obviously loved him when he played for the Braves, too.
Yeah. You know? Oh, yeah.
And so he's the reason the Chop came to Atlanta.
So Tim McCarver loved him, too. One of my favorite Deion punt returns was at maybe the last game of the year in 89 or 90 at Fulton County Stadium. He ran a punt return back for a touchdown. He ran through like 50 guys. And about the 25, he started high-stepping, and he put the hand behind his helmet. And about the 5, he did the dance into the end zone. I was like, just go for it, man. That's so great. But a lot of people don't like him. And I see both sides, man. But he's proved himself as a coach, and he more than proved himself as a player.
Hair Metal Henry said he wants to be the ambassador to the Playboy Mansion. So,
well, get on that right there. Do all that.
Sounds about right.
Where would you want to be?
I mean, somewhere warm. I wouldn't care. Just send me somewhere warm. Tropical.
What about South Korea?
I'm good. I'm good there. I'll politely say no to that.
I know where Dr. Crane wants. Italy, baby.
Yes, sir.
Or is Sicily? You want to go there?
Any place in Italy. I mean, I would live there as a homeless man. I would not mind.
Okay.
I really wouldn't. I mean, you get $3 pizza.
Amsterdam. I'll do Amsterdam.
I mean, come on.
What about Vatican City? Although it's typically its own country.
Correct.
It's still in Italy.
Yeah, I think they still use, whatchamacallit.
Swiss Army?
Yeah, thank you.
Swiss Army.
Like the cheese.
Yeah, the Swiss Army.
Yeah.
Guards like the Pope and all that, yeah.
Like the knife, the Swiss knife. There you go.
We need a history teacher to come in here, world history, just one day and get us up to par on things.
I know a guy.
Okay, I bet you do.
I'll pass on that. That's fine. Coming up next, we'll talk to John McClain. We'll get into the NFL with him. That's all up next here on Chasing Big Joe, 102.5, 106.3 The Game.